You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027.
Well, it's day 377 of one of the most severe lockdowns in response to COVID anywhere in the world. And we've got the brand father, Jeremy Sampson, MD of Brand Finance Africa, on the line as always. Good evening, Jeremy.
Good evening, Michael. Good to be with you, as always.
And it's good news for a change. We're going to have our first market delivery of J&J's single-shot vaccine on the 22nd to the 24th of April, with 1.1 million doses fresh from Aspen's local factory, according to the health minister. These are the doses that are going to kick off the mass rollout program. So at last, we have a cast-in-stone date, sort of. It's either the 22nd, the 23rd, or the 24th. But it's more than we've had till now.
Michael, as long as they do it by the end of April, fantastic. Now, J&J has got incredible ratings. It's only a one shot as opposed to two or even three. So the sooner they get it going, the better. I just hope their systems are organized. Now, we're hearing repeatedly that the rollout is incredibly slow. I saw a tweet today, and I don't know if it's true, but apparently Zimbabwe's doing double the rate of South Africa at the moment. So they've got to get their acts together and get it out there. And the sooner the better, because otherwise we might have mutations that are moving outside the efficacy of the current vaccines.
And that is a big concern. The IT system, as I'm given to believe in my conversations with Stavros Nicolaou at Business for South Africa, still need a lot of work. And when it comes to government and IT systems, I don't know if anyone's tried to use a Department of Home Affairs or an e-Natus government IT system recently. Well, there really isn't much hope in that. Jeremy, wait right there. We just have to cross to Anne Williams, who's standing by with the day's news.
This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027.
Welcome back to The Brand Father with Jeremy Sampson. Jeremy, interesting to see LG pulling out of the mobile phone market. What do you make of that?
Michael, it's one of the oldest rules in branding. If you're number one, fantastic. If you're number two, that's okay. If you're three, be careful. And if you're four, get out, get out. Because that's the reality, just about any field you're in. If you're not on the top, you're going to be squeezed. And LG has been hanging in there for a long, long time. But let's face it, when you actually compare it with Apple, with Samsung, even Huawei, it's been bringing up the rear quite a lot. So I think it makes good sense. Look, LG is a fantastic company. It's a fantastic brand. It does all sorts of other things extremely well. And this was obviously an area where they were the weakest. Yep. I'm sure they were losing money. And this is where I know it's very good for any company to accept the fact that if they're not doing well in one category, perhaps they can move on to another or strengthen their position in another. So I think it actually makes good business sense.
And LG, one of those amazing South Korean success stories, family business, was a huge conglomerate. And I was not aware until Martin Davies of Deloitte told me that one of their earliest successful products was toothbrushes, because LG is now known for all of its consumer electronic goods. Life's good. Life's good too if you're Australian winemakers at the moment. I mean, Aussie winemakers, talk about when life gives you lemons, or China gives you lemons to go out and get some tequila along with your wine. They've been really making a huge impression on the French and British markets. You sent me a very interesting story. Just take me through it.
Well, basically, people will recall that's been a trade spat between Australia and China. And China, like it's doing around the world, is using its muscle increasingly in an aggressive way. And in the case of Australia, it went into the wine industry sector, where they said, right, we're not going to import your wines anymore, or else we're going to put a huge surcharge on them. So that meant that if you go actually back down to November, they chopped imports by 56%. But then in December, they chopped imports of 98%. Now, a side effect of all that is very interesting, because I know there are a lot of wine estates now in Australia actually owned by the Chinese. So that must have caused huge consternation. But the Aussies, being very resourceful, then immediately went ballistic, as it were, creating other markets. And when you actually look at their January figures, and that was in the article, when you look in the UK, sales of Australian wine are up 206%. In France, imagine France, up over 500%, and then to the US over 25%. So full marks to them. Look, they've still made a loss. They've still got a bit of a problem, but that's been mitigated by their aggressive marketing to these other countries. And I think that's something that they should be extremely proud of.
Well, we also need to take a leaf out of the Australians' books here. I mean, if the Chinese are slapping import tariffs on Australian wine, we need to use our special relationship with China through BRICS and other means and start upping our exports to China. Jeremy, what are we doing to follow in the footsteps of Australia's chutzpah?
Well, it's a very good question. I've actually been trying to find out today and see some local data, and I haven't been successful. Now, there have been stories going around that, in fact, South Africa has actually taken over more of an aggressive role since the sanctions were slapped on the Australians. But we don't know to what degree. And also, of course, we're geographically not as close either. But hopefully we're going to see data coming out of, I don't know, WESA or whoever, which will show us what's been going on over the last 6 months, because we know that certainly back in October or so, the South African wine industry was in very dire straits because of prohibition and ban on movement and all that sort of thing. And they seem to have been able to revive themselves quite well. And of course, there's a lot of sympathy for South African wine producers, especially in the UK. Justice Robertson, who writes in the FT, has been a great friend of South Africa, and there have been others there, because they realise that value for money, South African wine is virtually unbeatable.
Yeah, Jeremy, own goals, us, prohibition, and hamstringing our own wine industry? Never. Not here in South Africa. We don't do own goals. Let's not even go there. I want to pay tribute, though, to the loss of an icon in the publishing world, Jonathan Ball, and a great loss at 69. And my mom turned 69 tomorrow, and I said to her today, because I'm taking her away over the long weekend, she had her hair done and sent me a picture. I said, "Mom, are you sure you're not 59? I mean, she's still on fighting fit." So I think gone too soon, Jonathan Ball.
Well, absolutely. He was a giant in the field, and he didn't hold back. And any industry needs champions. They need heroes. And he was certainly one in the publishing field. I hope someone's going to step up to the plate now and replace him, because publishing is an area that is never an easy area to be in. The margins are very tight, and it's very competitive. But he certainly published some fantastic books and supported authors and issues in a very, very strong way.
He was a gruff and eccentric, warm and temperamental, voracious intellectual, as Mark Hafisa wrote in the Daily Maverick. I think a lovely tribute and obituary to him by Mark Hafisa. If you haven't read it, get onto the DM and read that. And then the Masters, at least we've got some escapism again. And I see as Brand Finance has launched its apparel rankings, Nike doing it again, always reminds you of Tiger Woods. And we've got Dustin Johnson, who's going to try and emulate Tiger Woods in becoming the first man to defend his Masters green jacket since Tiger Woods did it. When was it? Early 2000.
And he'll be wearing his Adidas logo, which is interestingly only half the value of Nike. Nike's over $30 billion. Bryson DeChambeau will have his Puma logo there. So it's going to be very interesting. A lot of people think Jordan will do well. I have a new grandson called Jordan, and so we're rooting for him this time around, and he's going to be for Under Armour. Under Armour, I notice, is not in the top 50 brands, at least I couldn't see it, so it really is one of the smaller players. But you see all the logos on display with all these players, and you think all the support and all the money at the sponsors, and it really is big, big business.
Massive business. The purse is $11.5 million. Jeremy Sampson, the brand father, with the brands and sense, as always.